Hello and welcome to this edition of Agenda, I'm Ewan Gorn. Why has it taken so long to have updated rules in place for landlords and tenants in the private sector? We speak to those involved in trying to make that happen and take a look at a new bill aimed at regulating the private rental market. But what can be learned from previous efforts to manage this sector and how can that be applied to what's now being proposed? The government is asking for the public's view on moves to crack down on rogue landlords and regulate the Manx rental market. A consultation has been launched on a bill to introduce minimum property standards and a register of all private landlords. Proposals include the creation of a rent deposit scheme too and ongoing monitoring of the sector. It's 7 years after a similar bid by government for mandatory regulation failed. So what went wrong at that time? I spoke to the man who brought the Landlord and Tenant Bill, as it was being called then, to the table in 2013, Douglas East MHK, Chris Robertshaw.
At the time, you might recall that the department was deeply involved in the whole issue, a panoply of housing issues. Remember the David Tolson Partnership Report came out? Still stuff on there, incidentally, that needs to be done, even to this day. And is now coming back into the forefront of members' minds. But we also tried to bring forward a landlord and tenant bill. And I think you will understand as a member for Douglas East that landlord and tenant issues are very much in the forefront of our minds. There are still to this day substandard tenancies around of some significance. So we were, I was certainly very passionate about it. It fell down, as you said. It fell down in Keys. To this day, I'm not absolutely sure just why. There was a strong feeling at the time that the way the bill had been written, had been drafted, was unusual. To some degree, that's true, because at the time we had seen a number of changes in the drafting staff. And at the time, the style that was used in the drafting of the bill was by, as I recall, somebody from New Zealand, which was a little bit different. And Keys were uncomfortable with that style. However, it's also true to say that there was very significant pressure at the time from certain landlords, there are many good landlords, certain landlords who were uncomfortable. And I don't want to cast aspersions, but there were also a number of members at the time who were also landlords. And I think the whole thing came under intense and to some extent undue pressure, and ultimately it fell down. I'm obviously very pleased indeed to see it coming back now, way past time. Even at the time we were trying to bring the Landlord and Tenant Bill through then, in, what did we say, 2013, we were one of the last jurisdictions of our type to go for it. So we're now way behind and we really must get one in. It is comforting that a number of landlords at the time did enrol in the voluntary scheme, and it would be good and sensible if landlords now looked back at that again and enrolled voluntarily, because it would bring them into the style which I think ultimately will come out of the new bill when it eventually gets through. And I think this House will see it through.
Mm. Well, what are the lessons to be learned from the attempt that you made in terms of bringing landlords on side?
I don't think I could learn any lessons other than it was unfortunate that the drafting style was uncomfortable. I think times have changed, believe it or not. Memberships changed significantly. People's mindsets have changed, and frankly, I think people are more inclined to be much fairer and ensuring that both landlord and tenant get treated properly. And I look forward to seeing the bill pass through the House of Keys and LegCo.
Is there a need to balance those responsibilities? I believe, looking back at some of the reports, looking at the bill that you were trying to move, the landlord said it was unfairly weighted towards the tenant, the legislation that was being proposed. I mean, some would say they would argue that, but what do you think?
Well, I'd agree. They would say that, wouldn't they? It wasn't. It was, incidentally, I think it's important, you know, not to put all the landlords in one box. There are many, many, many good landlords. And there are a number of, to this day, rogue landlords, and we must deal with that. Mm. And I think the sound and thunder, as it were, came from that latter group.
Now, I just want to ask, finally, these housing issues, you mentioned you're at Douglas East MHK, of course. Yeah. How widespread do you think the problem of rogue landlords is, particularly in your patch where there are so many sort of flats?
Well, it's particularly bad in Douglas East. I'm not familiar with the degree to which it's a problem outside of Douglas East itself, but both myself and Claire are very familiar with it within our own constituency. But as long as the bill is written fairly and in a balanced way, it helps good landlords and tenants. And there are rogue tenants as well. And I'm sure there's no intention for the bill to overprotect them. I think there's a balance of issues between the two, and both need to conduct themselves properly, both the landlord and the tenant. But a bill gives guidance to both parties. I think that's the best way to put it.
Chris Robertshaw there. It's estimated £4.5 million is paid per year by government to private sector landlords. Stephen Moore was part of the Landlords Association, which has been in stasis, he says, and objected to the bill as was proposed by Mr. Robertshaw. I spoke to him.
I'm a very minor landlord, but I do know many other landlords in similar situations to myself, who are small, and consequently that adds up to an awful lot of people who, like me, are concerned. And then, of course, it multiplies into landlords who have a lot of property. So although I am a minor landlord, there is many other landlords in my situation, so we do amount to quite a number of people.
Firstly, we'll look back in history, if we may. There's a new bill come forward which bears a close resemblance to one that was introduced 5 or 6, possibly even 7 years ago now. That was being introduced by Chris Robertshaw, the Department of Social Care, as was, I believe. You and others of the Landlords Association, you fought against that bill to an extent over certain issues you saw in it. Just remind us, if you can, briefly, what were some of the issues around the table back then when it was introduced?
A number of the issues that was felt by the landlords at that time was that there was a lot of responsibilities being placed on the landlords, and there was no responsibilities being placed upon the tenants. And that also fits neatly into this latest consultation, because we feel like we're in deja vu, in as much as we had a big consultation at that time, and the landlords committee virtually went into stasis, because at the end of that committee, there was a number, Mr. Robertshaw's bill went to a committee in the end, and the committee came up with a number of recommendations, which was felt by the landlords that those recommendations would be something that could be worked into a meaningful landlord-tenant bill. Now, unfortunately, with this latest consultation, once again, the responsibilities of the tenant seems to have been dropped. And also, one of the recommendations out of that bill was that private and public landlords would be treated the same. Now, unfortunately, in this bill, it seems to be targeted once again at the private landlords.
So why does it need to be both, Stephen?
Well, we feel that everybody should be treated equally. There's a great groundswell of feeling that everybody should be treated equally, and we have the Equality Act. So why would you need to legislate for private landlords and not for public landlords?
But surely the two sectors are inherently different to an extent.
Well, I'm glad that you have raised this point, Ewan, because the preamble to the latest consultation does talk about affordable housing rather than providing any consideration for the cost of housing or the market value in a free market economy. Now, normally, the provision of affordable housing was the preserve of the public sector. So it's rather strange now that we seem to be talking about affordable housing in the private sector. So that is one of the reasons why, that if this bill is changing the requirements from private landlords to becoming responsible for the affordable housing, well, it's only right, therefore, that the bill should be applicable to both public and private.
Surely you agree, though, Stephen, that this bill is long overdue. I mean, many people have said that.
Ewan, there is not a landlord, I don't think, is not prepared for a new bill. That's why we had a consultation many years ago now. And ever since, we've been waiting for those recommendations to go into a new landlord and tenant bill. It never happened. But what we've got now with this consultation, it seems to have ignored all the recommendations of the Select Committee, and we're back to square one. No landlord is saying that there shouldn't be a modern bill produced. We expected a modern bill to be produced out of the Select Committee's work. Now, that's why you have Select Committees. They produce recommendations, and hopefully we get a bill out of it. But you don't have a Select Committee to produce recommendations and then completely ignore it.
Well, I'm not going to ask you on specific details, but what were the landlords so worried about in terms of, you know, no responsibilities for the tenant? I mean, what sort of things, can you give us an example of what needs to be in that legislation to make sure it's fair on landlords?
Well, I'm sure you would agree, and any right-thinking person would agree, one of the things that should be in it is that the tenant pays the rent on time. Now, in this latest consultation, we don't have that, for example, or the tenants to be conduct themselves in a right and proper manner with their properties and in relationship to other people who live in the buildings. So there's a number of things that the bill produced, that the Select Committee produced, that are not in this latest consultation.
Do you accept the assertion that some have made that the landlords do have all the power in that relationship at the moment? Because they can just say, you have to leave if there's a problem.
Well, it's not quite as simple as that. My understanding of the law is that a landlord would have to give notice to quit, and if there was a problem, then it would have to go to the courts to be resolved. So it's not a case of it's the Wild West, as is presented by some who are promoting the bill. It's not Wild West at all. There is a proper format to go down for both parties.
Well, do you accept that there are some landlords that do take advantage of tenants?
I accept that there's landlords and tenants who sometimes are wanting, but that's just the nature of life, isn't it? And the whole purpose of doing a bill where we've had a Select Committee look at all these issues, then some of the recommendations, or all the recommendations, which was accepted by both parties, should be put into this latest bill rather than being completely ignored.
I assume you're going to be engaging in this consultation and making the same points that you're making to me.
Well, I think that there's a lot of consultation and discussion to go, but I'd like to make you aware that in this latest consultation, when the Landlords Committee was formed, as I say, it mainly comprised of a lot of minor landlords such as myself and then a few big landlords, but even in this consultation, the relevant professional bodies haven't been contacted first, such as RICS, that's the Isle of Man Association of Estate Agents and Letting Groups. So,
well, isn't this your opportunity now to get involved?
It is certainly our opportunity to get involved, but we've already been through all this. There has been a Select Committee that has made recommendations. We can't understand from those I've spoken to why the Select Committee's recommendations haven't been put into a bill.
Well, could it be that it was 5 years ago, I think, roughly, that happened? Maybe have attitudes changed at all? The membership of Tynwald has certainly changed in that time. Could that be a reason, do you think, Stephen?
I think, to try and put it in a concise form, is I think there's a lot of feeling that landlords are bad, private landlords are bad, and tenants are good, and that's That's not the case, I'm afraid. I think we've got to come up with a workable bill for both parties. And if there's some of that select committee's work is accepted and put into a bill, I don't think any landlord would be objecting to that. But yes, there's a lot of consultation to start again.
Landlord Stephen Moore. You're listening to Agenda on Manx Radio. The committee which tore apart Chris Robertshaw's old bill was chaired by Chris Thomas, MHK. He gave me his thoughts on this latest attempt at bringing such legislation forward by the DOI.
The bill, I want to put on record already now, is better than the previous one, and I wish it well. I still think it needs work. So the history behind it originally was that Minister Robertshaw, as he was then, started it as Minister of Social Care and finished it as Minister for Policy and Reform. It went through second reading, was passed nearly unanimously. But at that stage, I was successful moving an amendment for the bill to be considered in the committee. And I actually had the privilege of chairing that committee. Members from memory were David Cretney and Leonard Singer. And we brought back a committee report, quite a long one, quite a lot of criticism of some policy aspects of the bill and also the way it had been drafted. And that met favour with the House. Mm-hmm. And the bill was described in our report as being flawed, unintelligible in parts, not comprehensive in parts, too comprehensive in other parts. And so therefore, 16-6, the House of Keys accepted our recommendation. And That's where we are. The Attorney General was called on to take new policy instructions from the department, and I think that's where we are now.
Just before we go to what happened and why those recommendations didn't get taken up yet, what was the policy issues with the former bill?
One of the policy issues that I remember was that it wasn't comprehensive. It didn't look at all of the aspects of housing, so it only covered private landlords. It didn't cover agricultural tenancies. It didn't cover tourism accommodation. It didn't cover public sector tenancies.
So why does it need to cover all of those things?
So there are other problems, and we'll come back to those in a moment. But on that point, for two reasons: the interests of equity, but also both in terms of financing the arrangements and also making sure that they apply equally, because the standards that need to apply to rented accommodation are fire standards and environmental health standards and tenancy standards and landlord standards, and why shouldn't they apply across the piece? So the current bill, as currently drafted, and we have to remember this is a consultation stage, full credit to the department for having put this bill out for consultation now, and I'm looking forward to working with the mover, who seems to be Miss Edge, over the summer to improve it, and colleagues in Tim Ward, House of Keys particularly, I'm sure council ministers will be involved, to actually make sure we can address some of these issues. But I think it still remains the case that, for instance, when we come to paying for the new arrangements, it'll cost money, and why should only the private sector pay those costs? Why shouldn't the public sector contribute as well?
But isn't the public sector already fairly well regulated in terms of housing?
Well, another important addition into the development of housing policy recently has been the Safeguarding Board Serious Case Management Review process, and that identified failings at Douglas Borough Council and the way it handled a tenant as that tenant came out of handling, and it ended tragically. So, you know, I rest my case, really. There are issues in public sector housing that need to be addressed. There'll be many tenants of many of the local authority housing bodies that will tell you that there are many issues in public sector housing. So the argument for government will be these are publicly owned bodies, and so therefore they don't need to be regulated. The issue that the committee, when the committee looked at the issue, we decided that wasn't valid. The same regime needed to apply. And even more importantly for us, the current bill still excludes, as far as I can tell, agricultural tenancies and tourist accommodation tenancies, and some tourist accommodation seems to be let for longer terms than is perhaps normal just for tourism. So I think we still need to look at the scope of this legislation as we go through the consultation process.
What else was in that bill that wasn't up to scratch?
Okay, another issue is with hindsight, I think somebody should have done more over the last 5 years to engage across all of the issues, because there have been lots of other developments over the last 5 years that don't seem to be taken into account in this bill. There are other issues that have been taken into account with this bill. So, for instance, deposit protection gets a mention in this bill, but that will be a surprise for people because there hasn't been a discussion about how that might work. It's a bit like a rerun of the 2013 landlord registration process, because that was a surprise to people and then all the discussion was about the detail. So over the summer, we need to flesh out exactly how the deposit protection and the arbitration system might work. What do people have in mind?
So what does that mean, deposit protection? Give us an example if you can.
So if you go to the Office of Fair Trading, a great proportion of people who go in there with queries and with problems are to do with housing tenancies. It's about whether your deposit is being kept unfairly by the landlord, or whether you've done something that you need to have your deposit withheld from you, and so on. That often ends in dispute. We need to develop the procedures and the law in this space. Applaud the department for having put that into this bill. Another topic, which was not there last time but is there now, which I want to applaud the people involved for, is that there's the idea that we begin to collect data about this. Because what's happened over the last 5 years is it's become quite clear that we have an empty properties problem in the Isle of Man. If you can't meet minimum standards to let out a property, the property stands vacant because it would be unlawful already to actually to let out that property. So we do have lots of empty properties. So therefore, firstly, what the bill does is it sets up a system to monitor private rented situation, but that's only part of the issue. There might be lots of empty properties, and this bill doesn't in any way develop the legislation for empty properties. Alongside that, we do have a homelessness issue, and so I would like the monitoring section to be extended to include more monitoring of homelessness, of empty properties, of also of the standards in public sector and agricultural tenancies. And because I know that the Department of Environment, Food and Agriculture has been doing for a couple of years a survey, a building condition survey, but I think I would like now that to be published immediately
to help inform debate.
And another thing that links to is back in Minister Robertshaw's day in 2013-14, he had to cover the closing of the grant system and that used to be there to improve properties. Back in 2016, Minister Tia, Treasury Minister at the time, got Tim Ward to agree that we could spend 40 to 50 million from a bond issue to improve the quality of housing. We've now got the climate change initiative where people are saying we need to improve the quality of the fabric of buildings in the context of energy efficiency. And this bill is silent about that. So this bill needs to be seen in the wider policy context of homelessness, of climate change, of improving the quality of housing and making sure that we don't end up with empty properties. And I hope this summer is the time to begin to do that.
Do you think trying to do all that through this bill, you might end up with nobody agreeing and a very watered down
solution? That's always where we've been. And we were there in 2013 and 14.
Well, shouldn't you do it piece by piece? So start with the landlords, then move on.
Well, that's always what people say. But my biggest regret, and managed to get Tim Wood to agree with effectively the motion I put down in June unanimously, that we actually need a national housing strategy. So we need an integrated policy, law and provision for housing.
Surely that's been abundantly clear for years.
It has. And Chris Robertshaw tried to address it, and he had lots of initiatives back in 2013 to 15. Chris Robertshaw resigned as Minister for Policy and Reform 7 days after the Landlord and Tenant Bill was rejected effectively by the House of Keys. I got very frustrated through 2017, 2018, 2019 that lots of little pockets of policy was being developed in housing without being brought together. And so I really do hope that Minister Harmer and all the other ministers who are involved, and the whole of Tim Ward and the whole of Manx Society and pressure groups involved, GRI, Housing Matters, can come together for an intensive period of work this summer in the context of this bill and other things that need to be looking at, particularly a homelessness legislation, but also directing social security money to help people who are homeless and to help improve the quality of places where they live. But it's going to be massively political. I'll tell you why, Ewan, because let's go back to that safeguarding board report. One of the recommendations in that is that we should think about the 10-year requirement to get into public sector housing. So in other words, if you've got a mental health issue, a drug issue, alcohol issue, you can sort of jump the queue in your own interest and in the interest of the people in your community. And that's going to need to wider political discussion, because that's called a sort of housing first policy. It's really, really valuable, because once you've got your shelter sorted out, normally you can get a job and you can feed yourself better and you can you can stay healthier better. But that's quite a political issue that needs to be to be grasped and tackled head on, and I hope that happens.
That's all from this programme. We'll be back with more from Agenda soon, and you can listen again to this edition via the Manx Radio website or through Spotify as a podcast. But for now, Gurumayu and goodbye.